Ready? Okay. We'll call the meeting to order. The State Government Finance Committee is 9:05 on January 19th, and the clerk will note the roll. Welcome to everyone. And I think what we'll do first, and we're short a couple of members, and I know Representative Krinke is still hanging around on Summit Avenue, so he probably will not be back for a while. But what I'd like to do is just go over who's on our committee, the staff, so everybody's familiar with each other, do a little introduction, and then what we would also like to have after that is for Helen Roberts to give us a little overview of what our committee is about and the fund balances that we have oversight of, and then we will conclude with the overview of the administration department. And Commissioner Badgerow is here with us this morning. So every member has in their packet a roster of who's on the committee and our staff contact numbers, and there's even a picture of everybody on here. So here's the cast of characters who we have with us in our committee. And what I'll do is the committee rules we'll cover after we're done with introductions. We have those stuck in there somewhere. I'll start this morning. My name is Marty Seifert. I'm the committee chair. I will try to be as fair as possible for everyone. Representative Hilty and I were elected the first year, so we get along very well. And in fact, Representative Mullery, who's on our committee, isn't Representative Mullery on this committee? Okay. He was my roommate at freshman orientation, so we go way back. What I'd like to do is just have everybody introduce themselves, their district, maybe how long they've been in. My district is Lyon County, and most of Redwood County was elected in 1996, and certainly look forward to having a good, productive committee. And why don't we just start with the vice chair, and we'll go around, and then we'll come over here and represent Pepin.
Yeah, I'm Joyce Pepin, and I represent District 32A. I'm a freshman legislator. 32A includes Rogers, where I live, part of Maple Grove, Hassan, Corcoran, Dayton, Greenfield, and Hanover.
Thank you. Representative Finstead?
Good morning. I'm Brad Finstead. I represent District 21B, which is the other half of the Senate district that Representative Seifert represents. My area includes all of Brown County, part of Redwood, and part of Watonwan County. And this is my second term.
Wonderful. Representative Blaine?
I'm Representative Greg Blaine from Little Falls. This is my third term. I represent most of Morrison and part of Crow Wing County.
Great. Representative DeLaForest?
Good morning. I'm Chris DeLaForest. I represent District 49A, Central Anoka County, the cities of Ham Lake and Andover. This is my second term, first term on this committee.
Representative Hilty?
I'm Bill Hilty. I represent District 8A, which is north northeast Minnesota, part of Pine, most of Carlton, and a little bit of St. Louis counties. I'm beginning my fifth term, as is our chair, as he mentioned. And I have served on this committee ever since my first term.
Represent Solberg.
I'm Lauren Solberg. I represent District 3B, all of Aiken County, and the good portion of Itasca County, along with two other representatives that have Itasca County, Frank Moe and Irv Anderson. I have the city of Grand Rapids, live in Grand Rapids. You ask how many terms I've been in, some people say two, too many. I'm starting my 12th term, first elected in 1982. That election, there were 41 of us elected, 24 Democrats, 17 Republicans, and I'm the lone pine left. Been on this committee several different times in the past. Our token female member of the committee, we've got two females, one from each side. But from the Democrat side, Phyllis Kahn, I know, is chaired the committee in the past, and she's attending a meeting, in, not on Summit Avenue, but downtown St. Paul.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. I'm going to tell Representative Kahn that you mentioned token female. Yeah. She'll be very interested in hearing that.
She will be very impressed with that.
Anything else, Representative Solberg?
Probably should keep my mouth shut.
Tell it over.
Representative Mallory, my old roommate.
Great.
Could you just give us a little introduction of yourself, your district, and that way members who may not have served with you in the past on committees know a little bit about you?
What are we supposed to say? My district is north half of North Minneapolis. That's west of the river, borders Brooklyn Center and Robbinsdale. Ask about me. Attorney.
Boo.
served on this for 2 years under Phil Krenke. I think you were on it.
No, I've never been on that. That was just last term. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. I don't know what else. My district, it's not the richest one in the country. Very diverse district. I don't know.
That's good enough. You bet. We don't need too much detail. All right, Representative Kahn is at a meeting, and I know Representative Krenke is also at a meeting right now, and we'll have them introduce themselves later. I think what we'll do is have the staff introduce themselves so we know who was working with us. Mr. Jordahl, do you want to start us out?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jared Jordahl, and I am the committee administrator. I've been a committee administrator for 7 sessions. This is my 7th, and this is my 3rd with State Government Finance.
Mr. Miller?
I broke the mic. Oh, I got it. I'm Dan Miller. I've been with the House for 2 years. This is my 1st year with the State Government Finance Committee. I'm the committee legislative assistant. I previously worked with the Transportation Finance Committee.
All right. And Ms. Roberts?
I'm Helen Robertson from the House Fiscal Staff, and I've provided staff support to this committee since the 1997 session.
Mr. Shepard?
Good morning. I'm Mark Shepard from the House Research Department.
Mr. Tim? Mr. Kelly?
My name is Brad Kelly. I'm with House CFL Research. I don't have quite the longevity as Bob there. That will be 2 years on the 23rd.
Wonderful. Okay, well, welcome to everyone. What we're going to do next is just have you take a look at the rules. The committee rules are pretty much what we've had in the past. I haven't had a chance to talk to Representative Hilty about these. I've been out of commission a little bit because we have a new baby in the household. So I've actually, when I'm up at the Capitol, get more sleep than when I'm at home. But if you look at the committee rules, they're in your packet. There's 8 of them. We will be very flexible on Rule 5 in regard to amendments. And the chairman of GovOps and the other cycles was, when we used to have GovOps, we had the 24-second rule rather than the 24-hour rule, which meant that if you didn't have a large delete all or a large, you know, omnibus amendment or minority report type thing, that the chair would allow it. And we're going to try to be generous in accommodating amendments. I think I would rather have amendments in committee and have us dig into detail more here and have the witnesses be able to come forward and commissioners testify. On the House floor, you know, you can't have anyone testify or anything. It's just kind of flying by the seat of your pants. So we're going to be generous with amendments. It will be a little more strict about that as we get toward marking up the omnibus bill when people have more ability to see kind of what we're looking at. And it would be my goal to have our omnibus bill pass out unanimously. I don't know if that's possible, but I think if we work with the minority enough, being that we're doing all the kumbaya, you know, training on how to get along and so forth, that it would be wonderful to have our bill pass out. And I think that's possible if we keep out, you know, some of the poisonous things that people find objectionable and put together a good bill as a group. As you can see on there, I would prefer that you not leave with your folders. Please leave those in the committee room so the staff can restack those up and put more items in for later. If anyone has committee business that relates to state government finance, I would ask that you ask me before you request reimbursement or per diem and not say, well, I was invited by some entity to come visit their office building or casino or whatever, and by the way, I'd like, you know, 6 days of per diem and expenses. Those are things that we need to have done ahead of time. Try to have your cell phones off if possible. We welcome beverages and food, so don't feel paranoid about that. And if you're not going to be in attendance at committee, please let Mr. Jordahl or Mr. Miller know so we can get you excused, and we're going to be very generous about that. I understand the pressing things and the double time you have on your schedules. The only thing is when we're taking on votes, it would be helpful for all members to be here, obviously, but let us know ahead of time so we can get you excused. I don't like having people tell me a week later, oh, by the way, I wasn't there. It's nice to have it ahead of time. And for the most part, our committee does not have a lot of bill re-referrals. Do we have any bills right now?
We have three bills.
We have three bills. So we don't have a lot of the early policy bills. A lot of committees will have 10 to 20 bills on the first day referred to them, and we tend to have re-referrals from the Government Operations Committee, which is the policy arm of this committee. Representative Tingelstad is the chair of that. So some of you who are on that committee, and I don't think there are a lot of you on, are any of you on GovOps? Joyce, are you on GovOps? Are any of you on GovOps? Okay, who's on GovOps over here? Yeah. Representative Hilty, you're in GovOps, aren't you?
No, I'm not. Representative Kahn, I believe.
Okay, myself and Representative Kahn are the only members on the policy committee that is relating to this. Obviously, for better or worse, it's not a popular committee, apparently, this year. Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair, that brings me back to the old days when we used to have to refer a policy that spent a lot of money from a committee like GovOps come to the Finance Committee and we'd fix it up.
That we will. And I would say that even if bills have a de minimis effect on finances, that we will probably request that they come here. And, you know, I'm the type that usually would not want to have every single bill stay in the committee. I think if we've got some of that merit going out on their own, we're going to send them out to Ways and Means. But for the most part, if members of the minority have some high priorities that they'd like to have, we certainly want to have them bring those forward as well. We want to be very generous about that. Okay, any questions on the rules? Representative Mullery?
Mr. Chairman, I just remember from serving on this before, we talked about getting an interpreter for when we had to read Mark Shepard's handwriting. I was wondering if that was ever authorized.
Mr. Shepard, has our handwriting improved at all? It hasn't. They always say that the messier your handwriting, the smarter you are. And I think that follows through with Mr. Shepard. And Mark, how long have you worked for the House?
Mr. Chair, about approximately 25 years.
Then he's one of the best. So if we do want to follow that 24-second rule, and that's for people over here too, Mr. Shepard is very good at drafting quick amendments. All right, Ms. Roberts, do you want to go over real briefly, just for a couple of minutes, what fund summary that you might have for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, since you've asked me to do this in a real short amount of time, I'll point out there's some handouts in your packet. There's one that is a pie chart that breaks down the general fund base for the committee's accounts, a blue sheet that's an all funds look at the committee's accounts, and then a spreadsheet that's a summary level spreadsheet of the general fund appropriations for the committee. And I'm willing to go over this in more detail with any member that wants to out of committee time. I'm located on the third floor of the SOB.
Ms. Roberts, it's a question on the white sheet on the back side. You know, I've been told that public broadcasting has not had general fund appropriations from our committee Is there 3.8 million? Can you just explain that on the backside?
Mr. Chair, Public Broadcasting does receive general fund money. It's actually funneled through the Department of Administration. We appropriate the money to administration, and then they oversee the grants to both public television and public radio.
Okay, thank you. Members, do you have any questions? I don't want to go too fast through this, but we're going to try to get to Commissioner Badgerow by 9:30 if we can. Do any members have questions on the white sheet that has a pie on the front and then line items on the back? Representative Blaine?
I'm just curious, if you look at the total of all funds on the back of the blue sheet and the total spending on the back of the white sheet, those numbers don't need to match?
Ms. Roberts, I'm guessing that's special revenue accounts versus general fund.
Mr. Chair and members, there are two different looks at the accounts under this committee. The white sheet is only the general fund accounts, and the reason I did that is because that's where most of the focus of the committee is, and we will be given a general fund target, so a lot of the focus is on that. The blue sheet is all funds that are appropriated by this committee. So it's not only the general fund, but also special revenue funds, workers' comp funds. There's a variety of funds. And you'll see, actually, at the very top, there's a general fund line that corresponds with the general fund information on this white sheet.
Ms. Roberts, on the blue sheet, we have, $102 million of federal dollars that come to our committee. Is that HAVA and some other accounts?
Mr. Chair, it's a variety. The majority of it is usually military affairs, federal dollars that go for construction and repair of their facilities in the state. There are other federal funds. HAVA would be one. There are small amounts in the Department of Administration for the STAR program. So there's a variety of federal funds. And if anybody wants more information on any of these accounts, I can provide more detail to you.
Just trying to get a sense of the committee, would you like to have more time over, like, one hearing over all the accounts that we have and so forth?
I think so.
Okay. I know this is old hat for you.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question.
Sure.
The highway user tax distribution, where we spend that at? Throughout?
Ms. Roberts. Chair, Representative Solberg, I believe that's in the Department of Revenue, and it's the cost associated with collecting that.
Okay,
So we can't start building roads in this committee?
I had a road that I wanted to spend it on.
I have an interesting bill at the end of the day. Okay, Ms. Roberts?
Say what this committee cannot do.
Judging from past history.
Just real quickly to start kind of at the beginning to give you perspective, this committee has oversight and appropriates funding for the legislature and constitutional offices, state agencies that are kind of known as the support agencies, that's Department of Administration, Finance, Employee Relations, Department of Revenue. We also have Military Affairs, Veterans Affairs Department, and the Small Veterans Service Organizations. The committee has oversight over the gaming boards and commissions, the lottery, the Gambling Control Board, and the Racing Commission, which are all non-general fund at this point. Pension plans are under the oversight of this committee, and then also there are four new councils that have been added this year that will be new to everyone. It's the Asian Pacific Council, the Black Minnesotans Council, the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, and the Indian Affairs Council. And just to give you some perspective, the committee's appropriations make up approximately 1.9% of the state's entire general fund budget, and this is a decrease, I think, over several years. When I first started, we were at about 3% of the general fund, and that's due to a variety of things happening, budget cuts and accounts being moved around, things like that. And our estimated general fund spending for the 0607, this is the base amount, is $563 million, which is a decrease of about 3% from the current biennium. I don't really have... That's a real high level. I would want to point out one thing on this all fund summary is even this, the funds that are shown on this blue sheet don't represent all of the funds that this committee has oversight over. These are the funds that are either directly appropriated in the state government finance bill or there's a statutory appropriation for. But there are other accounts for example, the lottery funds, which are not appropriated, or the internal service funds, which admin will talk about. That actually, those funds make up the majority of the Department of Administration's budget, so I'm sure they'll discuss them in more detail.
Questions for Ms. Roberts. Initial questions. We're going to go over some more details later. This is just to give us a snapshot to start with. Representative Krenke did a interesting job when he was chair of the committee. I know that in part is for one reason that the percentages have gone down and changing of how these accounts line up with other committees. The other thing I guess I would say is Mr. Jordahl, could you just give us an idea of where we're heading in the next few hearings? I made an invitation to the Senate State Government Finance Committee since we're into this group hug of bipartisanship and bicameralism and so forth, that we would have some joint hearings between the House and Senate State Government Finance Committees so we would not waste time in having agencies come over and then running over to the Senate and giving the same presentation, something that should have been done 50 years ago. But for whatever reason, Senator Cascaden is into a lot of this getting along and so forth. So what we're doing is planning on meeting with them when, Mr. Jordahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This committee, of course, usually meets Tuesdays and Wednesdays, 8:15 to 10 a.m. We're starting out a little bit slow, as Representative Seifert said. I do want to make sure you're all aware that we have a joint hearing scheduled with the Senate State Government Budget Division. That is next Wednesday at 8:30 a.m., and that is currently scheduled for this room, though we may be moving it to room 200. It's a great opportunity to, you know, have a joint hearing and cover some major issues. We're handling veterans affairs and military affairs, so please make every attempt to be there and be on time. Other than that, the next few hearings we're going to be doing overviews. The governor's budget is released on the 25th, and then the information can be free rein for our committee to get into. And in addition, we've been given an expedited bonding schedule by the Capital Investment Committee. They want our bonding recommendations by February 4th. So that is what is in store for the next few weeks, and I will keep you all informed.
Okay, for members of the committee, the bonding recommendations out of this committee include things that relate to veterans affairs, like the World War II Memorial, and then state buildings like the State Capitol Building, the DOT, refacing of the DOT building, which is how much they want for that?
$9.3 million
to dangle up the outside of the building next door here. Demolishing the Ford Building, Representative Hilty, you remember that was not well received, and that's back in the mix again. And I believe that this committee blackballed that recommendation. Is that not right, Representative Hilty, last year? And we have the authority as a committee to blackball whatever projects we want, and then the bonding committee cannot, by House rules, insert those blackballed recommendations or non-recommendations into the omnibus bill. And the Ford Building, we will have a discussion about that when we bring our bonding. But they wanted their recommendations or non-recommendations by the 4th of February. So we will be having basically one to two hearings on all of the recommendations for bonding, and members need to get up to speed quickly on the bonding. I'm anxious to hear if members would like to know a little bit more detail about anything, and we'll try to get moving on things. I did have a brief conversation with Representative Kahn last week, and she would like to recommend more money for redoing the Capitol Building than what has been done in the past. We've kind of been doing Band-Aids and spit and baling wire to keep that place together. And being that it's the 100th birthday, she thought that might be a good idea to try to get that up to snuff more. So we will try to have some discussions with the CAP board and with some of the other groups that are interested. The Ford Building, I think, was going to be demolished and then put in 18 parking spots or something, and some members would like to preserve the history. Representative Kahn has talked about potentially doing an RFP to have a private sector. And I know that's unusual, Phyllis Kahn and private sector, but to have a private sector group come in there and run a coffee shop or something, which I thought was a good idea. So if there's some members here who have ideas on bonding, we need to have, and there she is, Representative Kahn, we're just talking about your favorite project, the Ford Building. And so if you have some discussion items you'd like to bring forward on bonding, We need to forward to the Capital Investment Committee all of our recommendations before the 4th of February. And we were just talking about your idea of RFPing a private sector business in there, and I said that's unusual that private sector and Phyllis Kahn would put together instead of having it as a public building. So we will have that discussion later. And Representative Kahn, why don't you just give us a brief introduction of yourself and a little about your district, and then we're going to move on to admin here very briefly. Unlike the legislature.
My district is the downtown Minneapolis and mainly around the University of Minnesota and the West Bank campus. I guess I have everything except the St. Paul, everything except the St. Paul campus. I used to chair this committee when it was a real committee, when we had five of the existing divisions of appropriations as part of it, and it was a very bipartisan committee, and which meant that the members of both caucuses were equally mad at us by the time we finished. And it's an interesting committee, and I'm looking forward to working in a creative manner on it again.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. I did mention that I'd like our bill to pass unanimously. We'll see how we can make that happen.
No.
I'm not doing my job if that happens,
right,
of course.
68 is all you get.
You have to work for that.
And I will work very hard on expanding the purview of this committee as much as possible. So thank you for that.
Representative Solberg. Two things. When I served with Phyllis Kahn, when she had all those other counts in it, she also expected, whether you're in the minority or majority, if she wasn't there to present the bill, you had to have the knowledge of the bill to present it on the House floor. And that was a good thing. But let me ask a question. It's been quite a few years since I've been through the Ford building, and I'm sure that there are some people who have not been through the Ford building. Could we at least maybe make an opportunity to get the keys and go through it?
How many members would like to take a look to see if that's worth demolishing or not? Representative Kahn, do you want to take another look?
Well, I've been there, but I really think... I really think people,
can you just briefly tell us what's in the Ford building now, or what are we doing?
Nothing.
Is Department of Administration here? We could just quickly do a little... well, you are here. Welcome. We could just do a quick 2-minute. We want to be done by 10 today, but why don't you just give us a little idea of what that's about? Representative Kahn probably knows as much about it as anybody.
Mr. Chairman, I do suggest that if you take a tour, you have... the person is, I believe, named Brian McMahon, who's from the... kind of council and the interest of is interested in historic preservation of St. Paul landmarks, which, believe it or not, the Ford building seriously is.
Okay. Welcome. Introduce yourself and give us just a little idea of what the Ford building's about.
Well, Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Nikki Giancola. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Facilities in the Department of Administration. Fairly new. I've been here about a month, but I have had a tour of the Ford building. The Ford building is currently vacant. I believe it's been vacant for several years. The Department of Administration, I think it was a couple of years ago, commissioned a study to look at renovation possibilities for the Ford building, reuse. There were 9 scenarios that came out of that, and the way I can boil it down for you is the most cost-effective solution was to demolish the building, and our plan was to use it for parking, about 50 parking spaces. I think everyone's well aware that parking is a shortage on the Capitol complex. And that's where it stands today. I understand that it was debated quite heavily last session, and our recommendation stands that the most cost-effective solution is to demolish it and use it for parking.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, will we be able to see the other 8 recommendations and their cost-benefit analysis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes. Okay. I think we can produce that and get it to your committee.
Wonderful. And the reason this is called the Ford building is they built Ford motor cars there at one point, right? The first Ford plant,
yes.
Which I think is interesting. Isn't that the building where they have, they used to have the Minnesota bookstore?
Yes,
right. Is that gone now? That's not in there anymore?
On Olive Street.
Okay. But it, but the building is connected by tunnel.
Yes.
To the Capitol.
We put a lot of expense into that building.
Okay. If members are interested in taking a little tour over there, I will have Mr. Jordahl call around on schedules. We'll try to get Mr. McMahon and someone from admin put together. And how long of a tour does that take? Representative Hilty, did you go through that last year?
I wasn't able to
make it last year. Representative Kahn, how long did that take?
Half an hour.
Half hour. Okay, we'll try to schedule 45 minutes or something.
I don't know if you can get the tunnels open or not, but I don't know if that's a... So you can just
Mr. Chair, the tunnel is closed right now, but it's just a block and a half over. And
is it closed by the fact that there's a door that has a key that could be opened?
Admin has keys.
Could we use the tunnel just to kind of see how that works?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to check and see. I really don't
okay.
know.
We'll put this together. We will like to do it before the 4th because we need to vote on the recommendation. Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chair, I'll give the same advice when Representative Krenke just started as a chair.
Don't listen
to him when that kind of an answer came from admin. You're the chair of the committee, and it will be open. You weren't on the committee. At the time that Representative Krenke first took over, it was really cold down here, and he asked if they could get it warmer for meetings, and they said, yes, we'll try to do that this summer. And I suggested that he was new as chair and he could speed that along, and they came to me after the meeting and said they would have it done that afternoon.
All right.
And they did have it done that afternoon.
Wonderful. All right. Well, let's make the trains run on time, shall we? Let's try to find some keys for the tunnel. Okay, Commissioner Badgerow, why don't we have you come down and talk just a little bit about the Department of Administration, and Representative Krenke has arrived. Why don't we just have a one-minute introduction from Representative Krenke, and we have our full contingent here.
Finally here.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Representative Krenke, you want to tell us a little about your district and how many terms you've been in?
Not really.
Let's see, get seated here.
I'll be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Representative Phil Krenke, represent District 53A, representing parts of northern Ramsey County and the part of southern Anoka County. I'm starting my 8th term. I've been on the State Government Finance Committee for a number of terms. I can't remember how many. I do remember I did chair it for two of the number of firms have been here, so.
Wonderful.
That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank
and
you.
I'm glad to be back on the committee with Representative Kahn.
We're glad to have you. We will certainly make sure that our bill is bipartisan as it has been in the past. As Representative Kahn said, if it has more than 68 votes, we're not doing our job. All right. Commissioner, welcome. If you could introduce yourself and just give us a brief overview. We eat into your time a little bit. We'll try to have you keep it concise, and we'll get done in a timely manner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dana Badgerow. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. This is my second time around, having served under Governor Arnie Carlson from 1991 to 1993. So I know some of the members of this committee and worked with you in your previous incarnations. I will keep this brief because I know many of you have worked with the Department of Administration before and understand its complexity. We have a mission, as do all state agencies. Our mission is to provide services to other state agencies, to local units of government, faster, better, and more cost-effectively. We have 850 employees, 22 divisions, and the handout that is in your packet, called an intro to admin, is front and back a listing of those 22 divisions, quite diverse. A handful of them were inherited from the State Planning Agency a couple of years ago, so they are unique as well. They range from archaeology to the state demographer. Obviously, a big part of what we do is buildings, technology, and a variety of other services. We are the state procurement officer and purchase goods and services for state agencies as well as for local units. Our budget is $292 million for this current biennium. And much like the pie that you saw earlier, our budget is also comprised of several different colors of money. Our general fund is actually relatively small. It's 7% of our total budget. Most of what we do, that is our general operating fund. We also have grants that come through our agency, as was earlier described, that comprise about 5% of our budget. But the vast majority of what we do is through internal services funds, where annually we prepare business plans and charge agencies fees for the services they receive. That comprises 78% of our budget. And then we have a collection of special revenue funds that is kind of a hodgepodge of other kinds of accounts like state parking fees and so forth. I think I covered a good deal of this except to say that our general fund covers those things for which we do not charge fees for services, like the state architect, the demographer, the archaeologist, information policy analysis, which is the data privacy or data practices division of our department. We do get the general fund grants, as I mentioned earlier, which does include, as was mentioned, public broadcasting. The special revenue funds includes, as I mentioned earlier, a number of federal grants, the STAR program, the Developmental Disabilities Council. We do receive gifts, so the gift funds come through our agency. In addition, then, are the internal service or enterprise funds. Primarily, think of those for the leases and computer and telecom services. About twice a year, as with, I think, all other executive branch agencies, we collect accomplishments. So one of the other handouts you have in your packet is the most recent listing of the highlights of those accomplishments. We actually accumulated several hundred of such accomplishments from the various divisions, and those are the highlights. And today, in the interest of brevity, I'm only going to focus on three. The first is our performance against the challenge to sell real estate to bring funds to the general fund. We received the challenge to sell and bring back to the general fund $5.05 million in the 2003 legislative session. And as of the end of December, our total sales are $7.06 million, with total sales expenses of a little less than 2% of $141,000. The three most notable pieces of property we've sold for private development were the Anoka, part of the Anoka Treatment Center, which was sold to the city and county for part of the North Star Corridor development. St. Cloud, we sold 15 acres for residential development, and then the former BCA building down here on University Avenue was sold similarly for development.
Commissioner, I just have a question. That Anoka County site, was that put out for bids, or was that an internal government sale where if I were a real estate developer, I maybe would have paid? Anoka County is a fast-growing area with very high real estate values. How was that sale handled?
Mr. Chair, we are required by law to competitively bid these sales. We are also required by law to sell them for no less than the appraised market value. So both of those practices were used here.
No one expressed interest in that property other than the city and county?
Mr. Chair, I am not aware of that. I don't know whether there was additional interest.
Okay. Go ahead.
Reverse auction purchasing, also authorized by the legislature a couple of years ago. We're scheduled to have 90 auctions this fiscal year. We've had 68 so far. Thus far, we've saved $1.9 million just in this fiscal period, and we expect if those contracts are executed through their full term, they would yield a total of $4.6 million in savings. I think the most remarkable of which is the copy paper contract, which achieved a $1.2 million savings. We also sell surplus property online. You know, we have a surplus property operation in Arden Hills. We use that same piece of software where we are, for reverse auctions, we use it to sell surplus goods. And we've sold over $250,000 of surplus property through online sales.
Commissioner, when you save $1.2 million, where does the savings actually end up? Just within the agency budget so they can spend it on something else, or does it come back to the general fund?
Mr. Chair, it does go back to the agencies. Whatever color of money they use to purchase those supplies, for example, would then receive those savings. There is no method to capture these savings for reverse auction sales.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
However, Commissioner, I thought that in the last budget there was a counting of that in the area of about $7 million. Is that correct? or Mr. 5 or something.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, you're absolutely right. I believe as part of the budget balancing exercise, there was a reduction taken against state agencies in anticipation of these savings. I do not recall the amount, but it was in the 5 to 7 range.
So, Mr. Chairman, even though it's a savings and it goes back to the agencies, we captured it before they even got it.
Overtaxing.
We what?
Overtaxing.
Well, we did. That's correct.
7 million
compared
to
1.9 million. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
I think I was talking about the sales. I don't remember what the reverse auction was. That number was, I want to say, in the area of about 5 million, too. That we captured from the agencies before they did it.
Right. Ms. Roberts, would this be part of that 15% reduction to the agencies we did last biennium?
And Mr. Chair, I was just talking to Mr. Shepard trying to recall exactly how this worked. We had several different proposals that were across the board cuts to agencies attributed to various things, land sales, reverse auctions, cell phones. There were a variety of things, and I'll go back and refresh my memory and let you know exactly what the final arrangement was.
Ms. Roberts, in terms of when the commissioner brought up surplus real estate sales and the legislature ordered, and I remember me voting for this, the $5 million of sold property, and they sold $7 million, where did the $2 million, is that in our forecast? Where did the $2 million go?
Mr. Chair, I believe that it would depend on the property. If some of the property had been purchased with non-general fund money, that the revenues may have gone to reimburse those funds. Specifically, the way the $5 million mandate was handled was the department was instructed to sell this amount of land, and if they were not able to do that, then the difference would have been made up through across-the-board cuts to the agencies. So in that case, that was recorded as a savings to the general fund, that piece of it. But I'll have to talk to admin about
the
additional revenue.
Where did the $2 million extra go? Would that be nice to know? Okay. All right. Sorry for the you were on telecommunications.
Sure, Mr. Chair. A third big piece of what we do is telecom and computer services. And just to give you a flavor for the magnitude of that effort, we have 200-plus customers across state agencies and in higher education. Not unexpectedly, over the last few years, our computing volume has increased remarkably, not only because of throughput increase, but additional systems coming online. It's increased 93% just since the fiscal 00. And at the same time, our service unit cost of a single piece of throughput has decreased by 36%. So that's a signal both of productivity as well as enhanced systems. Telecommunications, we serve 65,000 dial tone lines and long distance. We do have a statewide network, MNTN, and we have this new concept of internet protocol or voice over IP, we've recently announced a statewide contract with Envoy by which state agencies can reduce significantly their telephone costs by converting to voice over IP types of systems. Looking ahead, and I'm going to go right forward into Drive to Excellence because I know you have an interest in that. We've already talked about the bonding bill a bit, and we'll be back to talk to you about the pieces of that our agency is involved in. The new buildings are, I'll simply say, visible, on track, on schedule, and on budget. And we are, of course, always looking at opportunities for departmental reform so that we will be, in fact, more responsive to your needs for heating and opening tunnels. Drive to Excellence. Let me just start with the foundation for Drive to Excellence, or at least one piece of data that I think is compelling, and that is the demography in our state. Not unexpectedly and not surprising, the demographer tells us that our population is aging. If you look at the upper line representing the population of the state of Minnesota 65 and over, it will increase dramatically over the next 25 years. At the same time, those entering the workforce, the people in the 18 to 24-year-old time band, will be relatively flat or even declining. So the implications for the state government workforce are profound. If you take those aging statistics and apply them against our state workforce, and you take the fact that the average retirement age for a state employee is age 60, in just 10 years, 47% of our workforce will be eligible for retirement. So we must plan now for the workforce of the future, and we must redesign our processes to accommodate what will, in fact, be a shrinking state government workforce just by virtue of demographics. Those data lead us to conclude that there will be slower growth in taxable income.
Representative Kahn.
I'd like to see that Minnesota's population is aging chart. I'd like to see another line put in, obviously not now, another line put in there which would show what that would look like without immigration.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I'm sure the state demographer has that data, as you know, and we'd be happy to provide that.
Thank you.
Hey, Commissioner.
So some of the implications for that are slower state revenues. Clearly, we're going to shift our priorities to caring for this aging workforce, leaner budgets still than we're experiencing today. State employee skills and knowledge will become precious resources that have to be preserved. And let's face it, state government will look entirely different in 10 years just by virtue of these demographics. So a response to that, to plan for that now and to begin to put in place the foundation for that, is the drive to excellence. If we look across the other states, we are not alone in looking at transformation. What this chart shows is that really almost all states, but two, are undergoing some form of fairly radical structural reform or transformation. In fact, there are some states, represented by the green, that are well into phase two of the transformation, having started over the last 5 years to do reform within their organizational structure and processes. There is transformation underway in the blue states. Many of the yellow states, including the state of Minnesota, are what we are calling the active planning stage. And then there are others who are still thinking about and looking at the prospect of change. So we are not alone in this area. This chart really says it all. This is the sort of visual description of the drive to excellence. The drive to excellence could also be described as the drive to an enterprise view of what we do. If you look at what we do in the executive branch and state government, you could divide it into three kinds of activities. Those activities at the tip of the pyramid, the apex, which are those agency-specific functions that agencies know how to do well. They know how to take care of the aging. They know how to take care of our natural resources. Things in the middle are those shared functions that are not directly related to but support the provision of services. And then across the bottom, at the foundation, are what we are calling utility functions, the functions that simply make business run, but for which an agency ought to be relatively indifferent as to where it's provided, as long as it's provided cost-effectively and quickly and responsively. So what we've done is we've taken all of the executive branch of state government and looked at it in terms of its business processes and slotted the business processes into one of those three categories so that we could examine how we might do it better. This is just a quick graphic to show in 1954 what we predicted the 2004 home computer would look like. So if we cast our vision forward just 10 years, I don't think we can really imagine what we might have in the way of technology. So we must start to prepare for it now. Drive to excellence really involves three kinds of change. I really mentioned already the operational change, but also it's a governance change. How do we manage what we do? Do we manage it in a series of silos, independent from one another, without synergy, or do we manage it as an enterprise where we can get synergy and better leverage our resources? And then, of course, to think differently always involves a cultural change. So this is just another way of looking at that. The key part of this chart is the fact that there is a transformation roadmap that will be released within about 3 weeks, or maybe even earlier following the release of the governor's budget, which will in fact include all the work that has gone on for the last 4 months, and that's what I really want to describe today. Let me move right on quickly to the work in the interest of time. I skipped a chart that showed the kinds of savings and initiatives that have occurred in other states, just for your reference. The expectations are high that we can achieve these kinds of savings if we implement these reforms. But let me move on to say what we have been doing, because it's basically what I'm able to talk about. There is a core team that has been working on Drive to Excellence for about 4 months, consisting of 48 full-time equivalent employees from a variety of state agencies, 18. But in fact, over 200 state employees have been working in one way or another on these teams. There are even hundreds more who have participated as subject matter experts or provided data or worked in some way to shape the recommendations. Deloitte has been helping us, of course, all along by managing the project office, but also by supplying us national subject matter experts in a variety of topics. And then, of course, we have the Deloitte consulting team staff. I know the question was asked, Mr. Chairman, about what this effort has cost and what we're getting for our money, and so let me just simply say that it is a fixed-price contract for $2.5 million that will be paid upon the delivery of the transformation roadmap within the next couple of weeks. Over this five-month period, we have generated 400-plus ideas for transformation or reform. Those were funneled down into 109 opportunities by eliminating the duplications, by grouping them into subject areas, and then finally 32 or so business cases have been prepared. A business case is a case for change. What is the current state? What do we envision it to be? How will we get there? What will be the investment required? And what will be the payoff? Those are grouped into 8 transformation areas, and these are the 8. So you will see recommendations for change in each of these 8 areas. They range from, again, these are largely enterprise functions, how we source, what we buy, and how we buy it, and how we might buy it more cost effectively, how we manage our real property, how we manage human capital, human resources. And basically the whole philosophy, again, of Drive to Excellence is to look at all of these functions in an enterprise view. Sharing services, eliminating redundancy and duplication in agencies. Well, we're right on the cusp here of being able to release this, so in effect I feel a little bit premature here before your committee, but I know you had the interest in where we are. We are providing input into the budget process, so once the budget is released, we will be free to come forward with the detailed findings, with recommendations to the legislature for change. We want to provide for you a recommended governance structure as to how we might make this happen. We want to prioritize the projects. We cannot possibly do all of those projects this biennium. Some need to be prioritized and scheduled. And then we'd like to begin work.
Questions from committee members? Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, when you say shared services, I guess I'm wondering, would you be, as part of this, and you didn't get a chance to get into detail, trying to find out different programs of the state that do similar things or sometimes the same? And the reason I'm thinking of this is, way back when chairman and I were first in, I had a bill on job training programs that Governor Carlson vetoed, but we were trying to get it narrowed down, get a handle on what we were actually funding. And then the next year I gave it to Representative Gunther and it passed. But it turned out we had at least, I believe at one point, we had found 87 programs doing similar things through many agencies. Some agencies didn't even know that other parts of the agency were doing the same type of thing. And I'm not saying that many programs was bad, but at least we should have been able to know, and the government should have been knowing what's going on, what they're doing. Is that going to be part of the... I couldn't understand. It sounded a little like you were going to try and get a handle on those type of things. I'm sure that there's probably thousands of things like that, but is that something that you're trying to get a handle on? Or
Mr.
Chair and Representative Mullery, Going back to my pyramid, those items at the top of the pyramid would be the direct delivery of services that are agency within agency purviews. Drive to Excellence does not attempt to reconcile or consolidate those kinds of activities in agencies. However, having said that, once we achieve a cultural change that we look at state government as a single enterprise serving the public rather than a series of silos or independent agencies, once we achieve that cultural change, I think it's fair to say that agencies would more amenably look at what they're doing in collaboration.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, I wasn't suggesting that they all be in the same place or anything, or that they be combined, but that both the agency, state government, and the legislature would know exactly what is being done, what is being duplicated, and things like that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, we did not attempt to take that kind of inventory, but you're hitting on an outstanding point. We did not know a lot about where these services were being provided. We did not have a complete inventory of all of our information technology resources. We now have that. That was part of the business process mapping that has occurred in Drive to Excellence. So we understand which agencies are doing training. But our focus was not on the frontline delivery of service, but on what we sometimes call the back office functions, the things that support direct delivery of service.
Questions from, I want to get to the Deloitte contract a little bit. Representative Krinke?
Well, I can hold my question, Mr. Chairman, if you want to go to Deloitte.
Commissioner, do you, you know, this is the first I've heard of the contract. I know Representative Goodwin had some legislation here a couple of years ago about trying to grind down on outside contracting and consultants because of how much money was being spent. And $2.5 million seems to be an awful lot of money. Do you feel that we've gotten $2.5 million worth of recommendations out of this group? And secondly, maybe Mr. Shepard can answer this, is, but when we had the legislation on contracting and consulting passed here a couple of years ago, what did we specifically say that if it was so many million that the legislature had to get involved, or how did we try to push down on that, or did that expire? Was it just in session law and not statute? It seems, you know, the money must have came from one of the internal service accounts, obviously, to pay for this, but it seems to be an enormous contract.
Now, Mr. Chair and members, there was a temporary moratorium on some consulting contracts that is not in place any longer. And there are some permanent laws that relate to contracting for professional and technical services, one of which impose a number of conditions, one of which is that state employees aren't able and available to perform the work. That's a permanent law. There also are some particular laws that govern special types of contracts, like contracts for development of information systems and things like that. But there's nothing in general that would require legislative approval of a contract if the legislature has already appropriated money that could be used for that purpose.
Okay. Commissioner, do you feel we're getting our dollars worth, the $2.5 million for what I think is kind of an expensive contract? But
Mr. Chair, it's a perfect and logical question that I think every member of the public is going to ask, and the proof
and
will
you,
be...
You were not commissioner when this was let, is that right?
Mr. Chair, I was not.
Okay.
I came in about midway into Drive to Excellence, and by the way, I ought to mention that I am not chairing Drive to Excellence. There is a steering committee comprised of seven commissioners being chaired by Scott Brenner of the Department of Labor and Industry. I am a member of the steering committee, and obviously I have a high interest in the success of the project. Many of the functions involved are, in fact, in the Department of Administration. So to answer your question, which I'd really like to do, I think, first of all, we have not paid the full amount of the contract. We've paid only on initial installments because the final deliverable is that transformation roadmap, which will be a very detailed implementation plan with all of the business cases. That deliverable is due early next week, I believe. And then we will assess, did we really get our money's worth? And you will be able to as well.
Representative Krinke?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Badgerow. I know you weren't here during this time, but I believe it was 5 years ago The Department of Finance needed several million dollars to upgrade the semi for the state payroll and various reporting processes that the Department of Finance operates. We had considerable discussion in this committee, and we had even, I think we had a statutory requirement that they go seek outside bids for outsourcing Minnesota's payroll. There are certainly operations larger than the state of Minnesota that outsource payroll. The result was, of course, that the department did a cursory, somewhat questionable RFP and came back and said, no, it's not going to work, and went forward and spent millions of dollars taking PeopleSoft and highly customizing it, which they had done originally. They, I presume, since a significant time has now passed, that they're probably at the point where they are going to again need to spend likely several million dollars to once again take the software that we operate our payroll system on and highly customize it again. So I probably could have helped the department and didn't need to pay Deloitte $2.5 million. But the point is, until such time, what good does it do you to have the Deloitte report if agencies are not going to respond to legislative inquiry? I would question if they're going to respond to information or direction from the Department of Administration. When they continue down the path of requiring software to be highly customized using obviously a significant number of state employees to operate that software, because all of these things can't get the support from the vendor, so on and so on and so forth. And that's just one example that I'm aware of in the Department of Finance. So you have a report due within, I'm sorry, what? When's the report due?
Well, it'll be released following the governor's budget.
Okay. So you have a report in January. My father had a saying. He said, in order to train the dog, you got to be smarter than the dog. So, Commissioner, how are you going to make the various state agencies follow through with the recommendations that are in the report? Simple question, right?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krenke, that's just like, that is the $64,000 question that underpins the drive to excellence. You notice I mentioned the word governance. Let me just first dispel the notion that it would be the Department of Administration that would enforce this. Just sort of think open-mindedly about a green field about how we might go about doing this. The concept of shared service, first of all, involves collecting all of the places where we are doing payroll administration or accounts payable or a variety of other services, collecting them so we know what we have and what we are doing, so that then they can be either performed inside or outside. One of the problems with attempting to outsource a current process like this is that it is being done in a fragmented way with a variety of processes. If we can unify, consolidate those activities in a shared services organization, whatever it may look like or be called, then we can either competitively do them internally or we can have them consolidated for external service.
Okay, we are running up on our committee time. I know Representative Kahn and Solberg have questions. We purposely have the next hearing on Tuesday open for just such inquiries. I don't want to say inquisition. Inquiries. could we hold our...
Well, my question is very simple, if I may. Did the the contract that you gave to Deutsch use reverse bidding?
Commissioner? And if you don't know, we can come back Tuesday
no,
with that.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, it did not.
Oh, okay. Representative Kahn, did you have a quick...
Just a quick one on the business cases, sourcing driven by the best value for enterprise. One of the best ways you can get a best value advance is to externalize all the internalities. For example, if you're doing something and you don't have to consider the environmental cost. What are you thinking about doing to make a level playing field? For example, for cleaning. If you have a cleaning company that supplies health care services to its workers and pays minimum wage, a higher wage than minimum wage, versus one that pays minimum wage and doesn't supply health care. What looks like the value to get a clean building is distinct from the cost tax to the rest of the state. What do you think about doing to level the playing field when you do that bidding?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, the question you raised is really an entirely different question and one which I would really dearly like to address at perhaps some future hearing, the question of outsourcing current services such as janitorial. The term sourcing, as used here, really means purchasing, the way in which we buy goods and services and how we buy them, how cost-effectively we buy them, whether we are, in fact, leveraging the volume in state government. We have 25,000 vendors currently in state government. We are not leveraging the power of the state purchasing dollar.
Briefly, Representative Kahn, I know we have to be voted here in a minute.
Well, I was responding to the line that was on your side, sourcing driven by the best value for enterprise. And the answer is, how do you level the playing field before you consider those sources? Or do you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I think if you're talking about how do we determine what is the best value for the enterprise, we derive a set of specifications that meets the basic requirements of the enterprise, not a single agency, not a wish list of a handful of agencies, but what is the basic minimum requirement of all agencies, and that is the level playing field for that particular commodity.
Okay. I think what we'll do, members, is next Tuesday we're going to have a discussion, a continuation on the Drive to Excellence, if that's possible, for members to get any questions you may have. Commissioner, I think whether it's you or a member of your staff, we'd like to talk a little bit more about the benefits of transformation and maybe laying that over in practicality of how Minnesota can do that, and cost savings would be good. Probably we're going to talk about Deloitte, obviously, and then any other contracts that admin has entered into over the last, since the biennium started, would be helpful, of a significant nature. I'm not interested in the real small ones, but I think members have some interest in the contracting, potentially. Representative Solberg, we might have some interest more in the Deloitte contract. Yes. And just contracting in general. And then Mr. Shepherd, if you could get together those relevant statutes in regard to consultants, contracting, and outsourcing, I think that would give the members a good idea what the purview is here for cost savings and then potential costs in general. And if we think of some more things, we'll put them on the agenda. That's what we're kind of looking at for next Tuesday.
Fine, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.